In the east of the city, one person is thought to have been injured. Our crime correspondent Martin Brunt, who's in Paris, says it may be connected to an earlier incident.
The gunman responsible for this latest third shooting, believed to be the gunman that was being hunted since yesterday's shooting of the policewoman in the south of Paris.
Well, a standoff is also continuing near Charles de Gaulle Airport, where the brothers thought to have carried out Wednesday's Charlie Hebdo massacre are holding their own hostage. French President François Hollande says his people need to stay resilient.
France, through its values, through its principles, but also through the state and its civil servants, will be able to resist all sorts of ordeals. I have confidence in you, and I have confidence in my country.
Meanwhile, Prince Harry has signed a book of condolence at the French Embassy in London this lunchtime for the victims of the shootings. Let's have a look at some other news. Thousands of homes remain without power in Scotland following violent winds. On Stornoway, gusts reach 113 miles per hour, a new record. It's disrupted train timetables, with ScotRail cancelling all its services at one point earlier. These passengers in Glasgow were among those affected.
The weather, isn't it? Better to be safe than sorry.
What can you do, really? It's not a lot you can do, just have to get on with it.
It's going to cost everybody a fortune, or not?
There's been another slide in A&E waiting times in England. NHS figures show last week fewer than 87% of patients were seen within the four-hour target time. Meanwhile, the company managing the UK's only privately run NHS hospital says it will pull out of the contract. Circle, which operates Hinchingbrook in Cambridgeshire, is blaming problems in its A&E department. And this year's BAFTA nominations are out, with the Grand Budapest Hotel leading the way. It's picked up 11 nominations, just ahead of Benedict Cumberbatch's The Imitation Game and The Theory of Everything. That's the latest. I'm Tom Harrigan.
This is Phoenix FM.
Phoenix FM weather, brought to you by GT Creative Studio, Brentwood's leading website and graphic design specialists.
Yeah, lovely morning, isn't it? I think we've got trouble coming our way, though. Let's have a look. Dry and bright this morning, with a fair amount of sunshine breaking through and feeling mild. Maximum temperature near double the seasonal average, peaking today at 14 degrees, virtually summer. Tonight, largely cloudy conditions this evening and overnight with showers affecting many areas. Southwesterly winds tending to strengthen once again, gusting up to 35 miles an hour during the early hours of Saturday. Tonight, very, very mild, 12 degrees centigrade. That's almost turn off central heating, isn't it? Tomorrow, another mild day is expected, with the best of any bright or sunny intervals after midday. Cloud may be thickening up at times during the morning to produce heavy showers, though. Maximum tomorrow, 13 degrees.
GT Creative Studio, High Street, Brentwood. Professional website and graphic design services. For more information, call 01277 849 161 or visit gtcreativestudio.co.uk.
1, 2, 3. With Mike Jones.
And Affinity Wells. Welcome to the programme. I'll be talking to Mike Lesurf, my special guest today, in just a few moments.
Open your eyes and see what we have.
Lovely, hello, and that is Xanadu, and welcome to 1-2-3 for Friday afternoon, 9th of January, with Mike Jones. Breaking news in of course, these terrible events in Paris are happening right now, and we'll keep up to date. We're just hearing that at least five people taken hostage at a grocery store, a kosher grocery store in eastern Paris. We'll bring you those stories as they happen this afternoon. Right, I'm very pleased to welcome, Mike came into, we had a chat back in October, I checked the records.
Right.
That's when you came in. Mm-hmm. Very welcome again. You're obviously a very, very busy man. Let's start with some of the stories that have been particularly affecting you very, very recently. Carrie Smith, who was the UKIP candidate. Formerly, Kerry was a Conservative Party member. Then he'd left and went to UKIP. And he was standing as a UKIP member. And then he was dismissed by his own party, really, because of comments that he made.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now here today that he is now standing again against you as an independent candidate.
Yes, he is the hokey-cokey candidate, isn't he? I mean, he's in, he's out, he's in, he's out. He was originally in, and then told that they basically, UKIP had found someone better and he wasn't up to scratch. So the original time he was dropped, it was because they had someone else come in, and then we had all the Neil Hamilton saga that went on, and Neil Hamilton trying to win the seat. Then Kerry came back in, I think, really, as a tactic to stop Neil Hamilton at the time, because by the weekend Kerry had been kicked out again after the tape was made public about his comment. So he's been in, out, in, out. He's back in now as an independent, but I wouldn't be surprised if he kicks himself out by the weekend.
So it's really, as far as the vote is concerned, it's a whole confusing matter, really, isn't it?
It is. It is. I mean, what do people, well, serial switchers, we call them, you know, people that jump from party to party or get disgruntled with their own membership and then go independent. You see it happen a lot, but I think candidates lose their credibility when they do that. I mean, you join a party because of your political affiliations. Sometimes things change, and sometimes people do realise that another party might be better for them. But when you're doing it two or three times and throwing your toys out the pram, and then standing independently against the party you were standing for, strange. I don't know. I saw Kerry last night at a meeting, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him except a quick hello. So
okay, I'm just going to quickly just talk about yourself. Your microphone is backwards there, so so we just need to do that, and that should make you a bit more clearer.
Okay,
that's better.
Oh, that's better.
That's better, isn't it?
I can't say all that again.
No, we heard you. It was just a bit echoing. Right. Okay. So 4 months to go.
Yes.
How's it going? How's your own campaign going?
It's going really well. We've got our team sort of built in all the different wards, all the constituencies made up of 11 wards. There's 5 in Basildon and 6 in Thurrock, because it crosses the boundary of two authorities. We've got coordinators in each ward. We've got teams in each ward. We've just had delivery just before Christmas, nice delivery of 30,000 leaflets to go out in January. They're well underway to being delivered. We'll have another lot going out. We'll start back knocking on the doors at the weekend. We've given people a little bit of a rest over Christmas. I was eager to go out Boxing Day, but I thought it might not go down too well.
Observers are saying that this is really an election this time, a general election, that nobody can call. There is no dominant party, there is no clear indication of which is going to go, and then what's going to happen with the minor party. It's a six-horse race,
yep,
with 3/4 possible winners. But is anybody going to be a winner if they're going to rely on the support from the minor parties?
Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting for sure. And it's, I mean, nationally, we've got the issue with the SNP doing really well, and how will that affect Labour votes and votes from the other parties? The Greens are polling well. UKIP polled well locally, and they polled well in the county council elections in 2013. I think people, you know, with what's gone on in Basildon specifically, I think people are getting a little bit wise to the fact that maybe they, you know, UKIP aren't going to be the party for them. I mean, they've got the most councillors in the country in Basildon, UKIP, mm-hmm, but they don't seem to be sort of coherent, false. They're all quite loose cannons, you know. They're all work, you know,
is
making comments and you
is
know
that lack of experience as well, like the new boys in town, really.
More than likely, I mean, they've come from nowhere, so the candidate, probably a lot of the candidates, didn't expect to be elected. But in, we know that in Basildon and in Thurrock as well, there's the UKIP threat is stronger than other parts of the country. So we know we will take it seriously. We'll take UKIP threat seriously. I'm willing to debate UKIP. I'm willing to talk about immigration and migration. But hopefully, you know, my campaign, at the end of the day, there's going to be a Conservative or a Labour government, and it's going to be either a majority or a minority. So I'm campaigning against Stephen Metcalfe, the current Tory MP. Whatever UKIP decide to do and the other parties, hopefully I can talk to enough people about where I'm standing that I'll win the day. First past the post system, so it's very, you know, cut and dried, isn't it? The one with the most votes wins. So
what about the Liberal Party? Are they standing in Basel or not? Or?
I'm not sure as they stand at the moment. They haven't named a candidate for sure. They do usually stand. I think they got around 5,000 or 6,000 votes last time.
Okay.
They're not a strong force in Basildon. They've only got one councillor in.
Well, what about nationally? Do you think that it's been really a bit of a disastrous coalition with the Tories?
Absolutely.
Do you think that that's done far more harm than good, and that they really need to reinvent themselves?
I think they're a busted flush as far as national politics goes. Locally, you do in Brentwood, you see them sort of treading water, if you like, and not doing too badly. But nationally, I think their numbers are going to be drastically cut. They are yellow Tories. They went in coalition with the Conservatives. All they've done for the last 4.5 years is top up the Tory vote when they've needed it. And the bedroom tax and the problems that we're seeing with the NHS are all because there's enough Lib Dems voting with the Conservatives to make it happen.
But locally, it's worked quite well in Brentwood, hasn't it? You worked quite hand in hand with the Liberals here in Brentwood on the council. It's
sure.
Worked.
Sure. It has worked. We're coming to the end of that year when we formed the Accord, and we've all have been working together. We've just got together and finalised the budget settings, which is obviously the biggest sort of one issue that you're going to deal with setting next year's budget, and that's gone quite well. You have to compromise when you're in a Accord with different parties, but knowing Barry Aspinall, knowing David Kendall and Vicky Davis, you know, they are experienced politicians in Brentwood, and they that's why they're councillors, and that's probably why in our area we didn't see any UKIP councillors, either county or local, because the Lib Dems work hard, Labour work hard, some Tories work hard. I'll even say that begrudgingly.
Ooh,
so yeah, I know.
Your
painful.
Bottom lip went there.
Some do.
You must be worried nationally. Let's talk nationally again. You mentioned Scottish Nationals there. Labour must be worried nationally that Scottish Nationals are going to do harm to the Labour vote in Scotland.
I think we've got to work very hard in Scotland, and I think Jim Murphy's going to be, you know, doing a great job and trying to win back the Labour vote that we've lost up there. It will be ironic, really, if we win South Basildon and East Thurrock, which I hope we will do, and don't form a majority government, because that's normally what happens. Whoever wins that seat forms the government of the day. I would think there's still a long way to go, and we've got to campaign hard, and we've got to win back the people that are a bit disillusioned with mainstream politics and national politics and the Westminster bubble. I mean, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of people that don't you know, get out in their constituencies and spend a lot of time in their constituencies. A lot of it's media driven, but if people represent the people that elected them, so they should spend more time in the constituency than in London, as far as I'm concerned.
Do you think there was any truth in the feeling in Scotland that the Scottish Labour Party being abandoned by London Labour, really, and that they were left to get on with it? Was it? Did you feel that, or did you think it was just media talk?
Well, I don't know, really. I mean, not having lots to do with what's been going on in Scotland. I do feel, you know, we've been through a phase where we've been we won the vote to stay in the UK, Scotland to stay in the UK, which was really important. And I think we have learned that people were not happy with the national picture, and obviously we've got to make sure that Scotland is representing itself as much as it can do, being part of the UK. But we've also got to realise that most people vote to stay in the UK. We've got work to do, but I think we can turn that around. I don't think it's going to be as drastic as people are saying. You know, some people are saying sort of down to 10 seats, aren't they? But I don't, you know, I wouldn't think so. When it comes to running the country, the UK, it's a choice between Tories and
Okay. Right, back in a moment, and then I want to talk to you about the National Health.
Imagine owning a gleaming brand new Ford Fiesta. What car's small car of the year? It's the first prize in the St Francis Hospice Winter Raffle, and tickets are just £1. Every year, St Francis Hospice cares and supports more than 4,000 people affected by a life-limiting illness. If you're over 16, help the hospice and buy a ticket before January the 30th, and you could win a fabulous prize. Order your tickets now at sfh.org.uk.
Link is the latest novel from D.A. Carr. As the NSTEA seals a deal to deliver time technology to the notorious outlaw Mensa, Captain John Garrick plots to undermine the NSTEA. Garrick doesn't live by its rules, and he knows one thing is for sure. Kill or be killed. Tick, tick, tick. Timeliners never die. They never leave. The book is now available on Amazon.com.
I want to break free.
Yes, all great tunes, but we've heard them lots of times before. So, how about this then? Original, surprising, and great radio. Ryan Ager hosts From the Underworld here on Phoenix 98 FM, Saturday nights, 10 till midnight. Indeed, don't miss that, whatever you do. Really good popular programme as well, and you can download the whole show normally every week on the internet. Right, Mike's my guest. Mike LeSurf is my guest. Don't forget, if you'd like to join in on the debate, you can on Twitter. We'd like to hear your comments. You can at Phoenix FM or at the Mike A. Jones. I'll read your comments out to Mike if and when they come in. Right, Mike, let's talk about one of the main, as it was called very recently, the political football that is the NHS. I actually heard Michael Portillo last night claiming that it wasn't really a Labour invention at all. It just happened to be in power at the time, and when the genius that was in Ewan Bevin sort of put it all together. Mm. And then another commentator on there last night said that we gave doctors, and I'm talking about back in 1947 or 1948, we gave them a golden checkbook, which is another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Let me just quickly tell a very, very quick story. My mother had a stroke a couple of weeks before Christmas. We live in Upminster. She was taken to Queen's Hospital. The ambulance was there very quickly. She was dealt with within the hour, which was really good. She was then spent most of the day in A&E, and then she was moved up to the stroke ward. She was there for 2 weeks and 3 weeks, and now she's been moved to a rehab unit in Dagenham, and all is well. And my personal experience of the A&E on this occasion was really, really good. But it's obvious to see where things are going wrong. Mm. The ambulance crew, when I actually dialed 999, the ambulance crew, I was told it was going to be over an hour wait. And this is for a stroke victim. But it wasn't. It was 20 minutes. And the reason that the ambulances are waiting so long is because they're all stuck at A&E departments with patients trying to get them admitted. The patients who are being admitted finally get into A&E departments. There are enough doctors, enough nurses and enough beds, but what they haven't got, they can't move them to the wards because there's not enough beds in the wards.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a report today that there are 1,600 odd patients stuck in wards waiting to go to rehab, waiting to go home, and the social services, etc., places aren't in place for that to happen. So that's where the hold-up is.
Yeah, sure.
You can throw money at the National Health Service, but the problem overall is that in the past, and I'm talking about the last 15 years, both parties, Labour and Tory, have shut hospitals. In this area, you had Harold Wood Hospital, you had Old Church, you had Rush Green, etc. All these hospitals. Basildon is seeing exactly the same thing, coming under massive criticism. Mm. However, it's just too many people, and only one, it's all right building one big hospital, but it's not good enough.
Yeah. Well, we built a lot of hospitals as well during the Labour years, and we get criticised for that because of the money that we had to borrow to
Yeah, you did. I'll grant you that. Joyce Green in Dartford was one of them, I think.
I think the issues, I mean, there's lots of reasons, and you've said a few of them, Mike. I think one of the misnomers that's going around is that people go to A&E when a lot of people go to A&E when they don't need to.
That's got to be true.
I think it's true, but I think it's minimal and it's not the issue. It's not what's causing the real problem. But I think what you said about people receiving their care and then not being able to be discharged and go home because of the lack of adult.
Not true in my case because, you know, today I've had the caring association come around, we're going to bring mum home, we need a bed here and a hysterics. So that's been absolutely on the ball.
Yeah.
But obviously not in every case.
That's it, and we hear that as well. I mean, we hear a lot of negative stories. We do hear some really positive stories, and sometimes people can't speak highly enough of the service that they've received, and thank goodness for that, really. That's what we want everyone to be saying. But there are a lot of problems, and mainly, I mean, when a government cuts the local government budget as much as Eric Pickles has done, Essex County Council, the massive millions and millions of cuts to adult health and social care that they've got to deal with, the services for people staying at home, for people returning home to be put in place so that people can come out of hospital, they're not going to be there like they were 10 years ago. So that is probably the major cause of concern. That's why Labour's going to integrate health and social care with the NHS. And we've got to work together. You know, it's really, really difficult having a free at the point of need National Health Service and a means-tested health and social care service anyway, but we've got to work together. We've got keep people out of hospital in the first place if they don't need to go, and if people are, some are going to A&E, or there's a question mark over the 111 number, and not having experienced medical staff answering the phones are directing people to A&E as the easy option when maybe they should be seeing their GP. But GPs are under pressure, and if, in some cases people can get an appointment quickly, but you hear people waiting 2 or 3 weeks, and if it's something important or urgent or something that's building up, you can't wait that long. So the pressure builds up, and then what happens? The hospitals get full. Basildon's hospital was back on black alert. They've run out of beds. The ambulances are building up. People that are having strokes need to be attended to as quickly as possible. You well know the early stages are the most important to get some medical attention. So,
I'm just looking at a headline here. You know, I mean, this is helpful, really, that, you know, Basildon Hospital misses A&E target as health crisis continues. Well, you know, what did they actually do? The national target is 95%. That means that patients must be seen within a 4-hour window, isn't it? But Basildon managed 90%. Well, is that too terrible?
Well, it means that 1 in 10 aren't getting that service, are they? So that's if you're one of those people, that is bad news. And then it's not just over 4 hours, is it? In some cases, it's sort of.
But
15,
surely
16
those people who are kept waiting are the ones that have got everybody's triaged immediately. You're right.
Yeah, then they're prioritised.
So if you've got a cut finger and you've got somebody with a heart attack, you know that the heart attack victim is going to be seen much quicker than the cut finger.
Absolutely.
So the cut finger brigade. And that's not just generalising there, but they're the probably people who are coming outside that 4 hours, and if services are stretched, that's why. I just wondered, you know, should we have these targets in the first place, which just sets very, very high standards. You know, people are saying that, you know, we've got the best health service in the world, and I think we have, you know. I was saying, if you go to Sierra Leone, you know, that's a health service you want to look at.
Yeah. Well, we did have, but things are reaching a point now, aren't they? And I think the analogy you made with the 40s and, you know, 1946, 47, when the National Health Service was born, at a time when the country was in dire straits, when we didn't have the money, we invested in the country and we built the National Health Service and we built council housing. We're not doing that at the moment, and hopefully, this is why, I mean, it's really important to me, not just, you know, I'm a member of the Labour Party, but I really do feel if we have another 5 years of the direction that we're going down, NHS is not going to improve. We are not going to build the houses that people need. The cuts to our local government grants are going to be abysmal by 2020. A few years ago, 5 years ago, Brentwood was getting £5 million from the government in their local grant. By 2019-20, that will be just under £400,000. What are you going to do? It's all right for the government to say that decision should be made at a local level, but they've taken all the resources away and then said, get on with it. So we're heading down a really bad road. And if we can't get back in May, then we are not going to see the investment. We're going to invest in the NHS if we get back in.
That's what I was going to say. What is Ed Miliband going to do? It's very hard as an outsider to watch. You know, you watch Question Time and you watch. It is political football going back between the two leaders.
It is, but it's the political decisions that have been made and got us in this mess.
So what does Ed Miliband think he can do about it?
Well, we're going to it's staff in numbers, isn't it? It's doctors, nurses, people working in adult social care that we need to increase, and we are going to bring in a mansion tax. to specifically deal with that and invest another $2.5 billion a year over the next 5 years.
But the Tories are saying that mansion tax is nowhere near enough money to pay for that. Where are you going to get all these extra funds from to do it?
Well, it's not just mansion tax, is it? I think there's a tax on tobacco as well, and also some hedge funds dealing with some. I don't understand hedge funds. I'll admit that now. But
hands
there's money,
up, neither do I.
But there's money to come from there. Labour's got a fully costed plans to deal with. There's no extra borrowing and extra spending. We're going to work within our means. But times are hard, and it's about priorities, isn't it? It's where you put those priorities. I would rather see a tax on people living in £2 million homes and people get the 50p rate back up for people earning over 150 grand, cancel the bedroom tax, make sure that we're not laying into the people that are the most vulnerable. And then we'll hopefully see society improve, because things will get more even. Mm-hmm. But we've got to invest in our NHS in the right way. But integrating health and social care with the NHS is vital.
So it's obviously apparent then that we've closed hospitals that we shouldn't. Some of the hospitals were decrepit old buildings that needed remodernising, etc., or knocking down, starting again, basically. But, you know, let's just take the East London episode. You've got King George's in Ilford closing its A&E. Everybody who lives in East London now, their nearest A&E is Romford, and Romford is just absolutely swamped. You know, you can't get near the place.
No, you that's it. And you can't get in to and park, Basel, and you can't get to visit.
No, exactly, and Basildon's the same, you know. So, you know, is there going to be money available and say, you know what, we've overclosed, we now need to reopen or build more or something, or have standalone A&E units or something?
I think the first thing to do is look at the preventative actions that you can take. Integrating health and social care, trying to keep people out of hospital in the first place, has got to be number one. If people can stay at home with adaptations to their property or with someone coming in, keeping things like Meals on Wheels going for people, if that's one hot meal a day that someone who's quite elderly, if that's what they need to keep them fit and well and keep them living in their community and keeping them being with the people, the neighbours and family members that know them, one meal has got to be worth... You know, it's got to be worth investing in that when the alternative is thousands of pounds in hospitals. My dad was in Queen's Hospital before he passed away. He came back to Brentwood eventually, but they were waiting for a bed, and he spent a long time in Queen's where he shouldn't have. He got well looked after, but he was in a bed that he didn't need to be in.
Okay. Let me just bring you an up-to-date from the terrible thing going on in Paris. Apparently, two people have been killed in the hostage-taking situation, which is at the kosher grocery in eastern Paris. Five people taken hostage. Apparently, two people have been killed there. We'll keep you up to date as the programme goes on. It's very, very sad. Let's just quickly talk about that, because... police shortages in Essex alone. I was listening to the, I think it was the Chief Constable of Essex saying, you know, that how his force has been depleted over the last 3 or 4 years. The same with the fire brigade. I mean, fire service was always had 930-odd firefighters, and now it's down to 600-odd. You could say there's less fires. That's one course of an argument, of course. Police, massive cuts.
Sure.
At a time when, you know, we vigilance, obviously, on the news we can see behind us. What are Labour going to do about police shortages, if anything?
Well, I mean, originally, again, from the outset, cutting the police budget by 20% was just, you know, there seemed to be this race for each department to try and cut the most, you know, and I know Eric Pickle started off at 28% for local government grants, and that's much higher now, and by the end of this term it will be so much higher than 28%. I'm glad that the police are speaking out now, because I've seen police officers and met with police officers in meetings when they've been accompanied by their police and crime commissioner, who's, as I've said before, an absolute, you know, stats man. The stats say that crime is going down, so everything's hunky-dory in Essex. And when he relays that to a group of people that have been the victim of part-time lighting and the lights going out at night and had their cars damaged and there's been burglaries and muggings and worse, they don't believe it, and it's not relating to real life. So it's a real problem. Recorded crime might be going down, but that's because people have given up, phoning and recording it in a lot of cases, because they're not getting through getting that done. So, again, we don't see our PCSOs. We need more police on the streets. We need to invest more money in frontline policing, because it was this massive effort to cut backroom staff and say that, you know, it's okay because it won't affect frontline policing. But backroom staff provide frontline policing and they keep the police out on the streets. So we've got to make sure that we deal with that. Labour, we're going to make announcements in the next few weeks, I believe, just before the manifesto comes about what we are going to do. But we must see more localised policing. We must see PCSOs and police officers back on the street, making people feel safe. But turning out the streetlights in Essex from midnight till 5 a.m. has caused real problems.
Well, Rodney Bass, whose decision it was, really, he'll be a guest on this programme very, very shortly, actually. So I'll be able to ask him that very, very question.
They turned them back on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve because of it, you know, said they were doing us a favour. You know, what about the other 363 okay. days? You know, terrible, okay. Terrible.
All right, let's carry on. Let's talk about national issues with the Labour Party. Most commentators think that Labour have got two basic problems. One is that people don't trust you with the economy, and two, they can't see Ed Miliband as Prime Minister. Let's deal with the first one. What we've talked about in the last half hour or so is, you know, what you do and your plans, etc. And it's always, you've always been accused, I'm not being personal here, the Labour Party, the Tories will obviously say, well, how are you going to pay for it? In the past, we've just spent the last 8 years repaying back everything that you spent or wasted before that. How are you going to ensure that you don't get that same reputation that...
Well, our country was not in a mess because of a Labour government. It was in a mess because of a global financial crisis.
I'll agree with you on that, but not entirely, because you have got the reputation for wasting, you know, quangos and taking a long time to make decisions maybe employ more people than you needed, maybe, and that's why the Tories think they needed to cut.
But wasting money, Mike, you say that. We sold off our Royal Mail at a knockdown price so that George Osborne's mates could buy it at a knockdown price, and then a month later sell it and make millions out of something that was actually East rail line that's making nearly £1 billion, £800 million profit for us, it's going into government coffers. They want to sell it off. So talk about wasting money.
You're quite right.
Why are we selling things that are profitable to the country?
I've no idea. I can't answer that.
So we've got to look at all those things. And money, as I said, you know, reintroducing the 50p rate, the mansion tax, getting tough on people, tax evasion and things like that. We must do all of those things, and we must look at where, you know, £3 billion reorganisation of the NHS. So you talk about wasted money. That was a waste of money because we are in a far worse position than we were 5 years ago. So I don't think Labour did waste money. I think if you ask people how they felt 10 years ago about the NHS and about police, they would say they were happy about what was happening.
Okay, but what are you going to do to win back that trust, which commentators say they haven't got with getting the economy right?
Yeah, I think the trust is across the board, and I think all parties have got an issue, rightly so, with the public not trusting politicians per se. We've got to get in, Mike, to prove to people that we can deliver on what we've said. With all our spending is fully costed. It's a fork in the road, isn't it? It's a choice of direction. Do we want to go down the road where we're going to continue with the cuts, continue with the bedroom tax, continue with Basildon Hospital being full to the burst into the seams, or are we going to go down a road where we start looking at supporting the people that are the most vulnerable, the elderly, the very young, 25 hours free nursery care for young people so that mums and dads can get back to work? That's really important. At the moment, people can't afford to go to work because of the childcare costs, and just reprioritising the money. It's going to take a while, but it's a direction. The manifesto will be out soon, and people can look and make a choice of where they want to be. Do we want to be isolationist and exclusive and stop people from being able to do the things they want to do? We've got to invest in education as well.
That was my next point, exactly. What, you know, if you look at Nordic countries, they can't believe that us and the States, when you get to an older age, when you get to a higher age in education, that you start having to pay for it. Should we not have free education right up until people, you know, actually go to work?
Well, I mean, I didn't agree with tuition fees initially, and I was in the really perverse position when I was the agent for our candidate in 2005 in Brentwood, when tuition fees were bought in, having to listen to Eric Pickle saying that tuition fees were an absolute disgrace and I had a free education and people should have a free education, which I agreed with. But what happens as soon as they get into government? They treble tuition fees to £9,000 and the Lib Dems go along with it. That was one of their pledges. So people don't trust politicians. I'm fully with them on that one.
Okay, right, let's just draw breath for a moment. Let's play a record and give us a chance to gather our thoughts. This is the Motors and Airport.
it's a new logo, website, mobile creative app, or marketing your business. Our goal at GT Creative Studio is to provide you with a creative solution built to suit your needs and your budget. For over 10 years, we've specialised in web design and brand development and provided award-winning creative services to hundreds of local businesses. GT Creative Studio, High Street, Brentwood. Winners of Essex Digital Awards 2014. For a free consultation, call us on 01277 849 161 or check out our portfolio at gtcreativestudio.co.uk.
There are times in your life when you'll need a solicitor. Here at DPP Law, we can help you with criminal, family, mediation, personal injury, and mental health matters. Whatever you need help with, your solution starts with a phone call. Call DPP Law today on 0800 027 7870. DPP Law, Brentwood. We're on your doorstep and we're on your side.
Phoenix FM Travel News, in association with the Beaches Care and Nursing Home, London Road, Brentwood.
Yeah, all is good at the moment. Can't see any real problems at the moment. All main roads, the M25 is working well. Dartford Crossing, very nice indeed. A little bit slow going into Southend. There's roadworks around the Tesco's roundabout by the airport there. That's about all I can really report on. A little bit heavy around Romford, but Brentwood Town Centre, absolutely fine. Billerick is fine as well. That's a question. Hang on, let me just do that.
The Beaches. Last few remaining apartments available with your own private patio. Call in and find out more. The Beaches, London Road, Brentwood.
Yeah, I want to talk about Dartford Crossing in just a moment, Michael. Let's just finish talking about the second point I made there about Mr. Miliband, mm-hmm. that people and they feel that they can't see him as Prime Minister. What's your view on that? And there was even a report today that David Miliband, and this keeps coming up, has not ruled out a comeback.
All right. OK, I didn't know. I haven't read that yet. No, I haven't opened the Guardian this morning. But I think Ed's going to be a great Prime Minister if he's given the chance on May the 7th. I think... when you know, the bacon sandwich thing always pops in my head when people say about image and...
Well, that's total rubbish.
Yeah, it is, because, I think because the policies that we've got are going to support people that need help, there's certain vested interests that do not want Ed Miliband to be Prime Minister, and they do not want Labour to get back in, and they are attacking him on personality issues, on the way he looks when he eats a sandwich, when we should be looking at the policies. The policies are sound, and therefore they're playing the man and not the ball.
Exactly. I mean, there was a whole programme on his speech impediment, which was ridiculous. I mean, if you look at Churchill had a speech just like, you know, speech impediment. So what? One of the greatest leaders we've ever had.
It's irrelevant.
Enough of that. I just mentioned there in the travel bulletin, Dartford Crossing absolutely clear. You've had some input on this, and you've had some work on this regarding, you know, the third crossing in Thurrock, etc. The Dartford Crossing is clear. As we said many, many, many months ago, and you and I have discussed this numerous times, don't stop to pay a toll and you won't have a queue.
No,
and
that's
lo
it.
And behold, there's no queues.
Yeah, and we'll see how it goes, but it's looking good at the moment. And I mean, it was really worrying times, wasn't it? When I think it was last summer, we were expecting a decision to be made on option C. They dropped B, and then it was looking very like option C. And then they thankfully put it on hold until, which we were campaigning for all along, to get the tolls out and let's see what it's like.
And this is a subject you're almost in agreement with Stephen Metcalfe, aren't you?
With both MPs and myself and Polly, we do not want to see another crossing at option C. Would rip through the heart of all set. I'm still slightly sceptical because it hasn't been ruled out, and I would have really liked to have seen that. It ruled out option B, and that was for the benefit of the Kent residents, really, did campaign more strongly, I think, than the MPs this side of the water. And I would have liked seeing option C taken off the table. I'm a little bit sceptical that it might, rear its ugly head after the election, and things are just, you know, put on hold until we get the other side of May the 7th. But hopefully, you know, the evidence will be overwhelming by then that it's not necessary where it is. And we've got other options nearer London, we've got other options further east that should be looked at before option C. But I wouldn't say it's over, but
I'm really delighted that you know, the toll that's working for now and without the tolls.
Okay, talking about construction, Crossrail obviously coming our way. Mm. Reports in the paper this week a little over exaggerated thing that Shenfield and Brentwood to close.
Yeah,
when you actually read the story, it's actually 3 days over Christmas. But obviously it's going to be.
Yeah, will it just be 3 days?
Well, so they're saying.
What happened this Christmas with trains and?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. You can have some confidence. But obviously it's going to be major disruption to the area. Have you got it right? Do you think everything's in place for that to happen? I'm asking. I'm putting your Brentwood.
Back on my council hat. Again, real concerns with what's going to be going on at Brentwood Station as well. It's going to be really difficult going through the period of extending the platforms and making sure, you know, we're getting ready to receive Crossrail, if you like. Hearing horror stories about the lorries that are going to be working down at Brentwood Station will be coming up Rose Valley and going down Gresham Road, which will be a ridiculous idea because cars are double parked down there. There's not enough room for a car to get through, let alone a big lorry. So that's got to be looked at again. I hope I'm proved wrong. I don't see the benefit myself. Shenfield, we can get to Shenfield on a fast train to Stratford in 15 minutes. We can get to Liverpool Street in 20 minutes. I'll get on at Brentwood when I go to work, so I have to, you know, slum it with the Brentwood people, and we have to get a slower train. Unless we want to go to Shenfield first. But we've already got a train that will service us into London, and we could pick up Crossrail at Stratford, you know. So this Shenfield thing is really...
Well,
you know,
I don't understand. I really can't get my head around this. And I've asked Barry Aspinall this about 3 times. He's come back with the same answer. You are not going to get a train at Shenfield that's going to take you direct into Liverpool Street. You're going to get a train that's going to go stop.
These are all station trains,
aren't they? Yeah. I can't understand that. Where's the benefit of that?
No. Well, there might be benefit to other people, but there's not going to be benefit to Shenfield residents, because Shenfield residents know they can already get into town. You know, 20 minutes is not bad.
Okay, I mean, I'm all for progress, and, you know, yes, you can get from here to Heathrow Airport quicker, then fantastic, but, you know...
They want somewhere to keep the trains, don't they? You know, they want... The area where,
yeah,
you know,
as Upminster is. Okay.
It's not good. It's not good for the borough, and it's not good for residents of Shenfield particularly.
Okay. I've just found out, by the way, that standing against you, unconfirmed but pretty sure, mm-hmm. that George Constantinidis, and I've probably got that wrong, is the UKIP candidate now for Basel and South and East Thurrock. Currently the chair of, or the vice chair of the Eastern Region for the UKIP party.
Well, that sounds like a nice European name, like myself, Le Cerf, and, yep. And a French Huguenot name like Farage. So
absolutely.
We've all got something in common there. That'd be a good thing to debate, won't it? Right, I've not heard of him, to be honest. So, I'll look it up if he's definitely selected, because the way things are going with UKIP, it's a merry-go-round, and by the time you get into something, it's all changed. So.
Okay, what else would you want to talk about? Right, Brentwood planning meetings the other night, you were there. Apparently Mr Hossack was asked to leave the building. Is that true? What happened?
He left of his own accord after calling one of the councillors, and I can't remember who it was, but it was on our side of the chamber, something, you know, quite fruity. Before he left, which got reported, and I honestly can't remember what the word was. Apparently, it was a bit embarrassing for the Conservatives, and on the night, there were 5 members of the Conservative administration there, ended up with just 3 of them being there, because Madeleine Henwood actually walked out as well towards the end of the meeting. They were in the embarrassing position of the leader of the council putting forward a petition, presented a petition that they'd wrote, which was totally fabricated about the Lab Lib coalition, which obviously gets the backs up of all of us, especially Brentwood First, who are also in the Accord, and the independent member Roger Keeble as well. Mm. And it's not a coalition, but to put that aside, it was a really poorly written petition about protecting green spaces. It didn't even say green belt, so there was and also they only had 700 signatures when they need 1500 for it to be debated at council. But all that aside, Phil Baker, who was chairing the meeting, said, no, although, you know, you've embarrassed yourself, let's hear what you've got to say. They ended up abstaining on their own petition in the end, the 3 councillors that were left, because it just didn't have a leg to stand on. The Conservatives, I've been a councillor for nearly 8 years, the Conservatives have approved many, many applications for building on the Greenbelt. There'd been equestrian centres in the Greenbelt with floodlights because someone might have been in the Olympic Games. There's Woolley Forge as a Greenbelt application. There's, you know, the list is really long. Even on the night, Chris Hossack, and I think this was why he got particularly annoyed, he was trying to get through a Greenbelt application to build houses on a piece of land in Hutton, which got kicked out. You know, if you want to protect the Greenbelt, I would strongly suggest you don't vote for the Conservatives, because they are the worst offenders, and it was embarrassing. They were embarrassing, as I say, the three that were left all abstained on their own petition. But Chris has got some answering to do for his language and his behaviour, but I think
business as usual then in Brentwood.
As meetings go, it wasn't too bad, but that was particularly unsavoury,
Okay. Finally, what are people talking to you about on the street when you're out campaigning? What are their main gripes?
Well, we've still got the issue. I mean, the NHS has been an issue. We did a street stall in the summer in Basildon town centre, and talking to people about the as we said earlier, some people that are getting really positive experience when their family members or themselves are going to hospital, but a lot of people that have been really worried. I was at a meeting last night in Basildon Council regarding the moving of the potentially the moving of Basildon, the market in the town centre, to a more central point in the town centre to make way for the college, which will make way for a development on a really nice piece of it's not Greenbelt, and this is the problem, but an open space that the residents really enjoy in Dry Street, where there's been a planning that's been approved for I think 700 houses, which is very contentious, but that's causing a lot of concern in the Nethermain area, in the Basildon area, because not that the Labour councillors, they're not against building houses, but these are big houses for people that will be moving into the borough. They're not going to do anything to alleviate the need of the people, the youngsters in Basildon that are looking to stay in the area but move away from the family home. So it looks, you know, the council has sort of given up on that as that's going to happen, so they're trying to now move the market so they can build a college in the town centre, which was all apparently part of the, you know, it's a domino effect. You know, you've got to do this before you can do that, before you can do that. But very worrying. Building in totally the wrong place, ruining a nice area of natural beauty. Equestrian centre there as well that will be going, just to make way for other people's houses. Not good.
Eric Pickle said yesterday that he's going to look seriously at statutory publications, which is a big worry for local newspapers. You know, they have to put their council notices, etc. You know, planning applications, blah blah blah, saying why are we putting it in press, shouldn't it now just go on the internet, and you can save 26 million or something throughout the country, but then that puts newspapers in danger, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, his track record on stuff to do with planning is really bad, isn't it? I mean, you know, letting people build 30 metre extensions in their garden and don't worry about what the neighbours think, relaxing parking, let people park on WL lines for 10 minutes if they're just nipping in for a pint of milk. Not good. Not a good track record. I saw him the other day in Brentwood on the Friday when there was a big debate in the House of Commons about the NHS. He was offer his curry lunch in the High Street. I said, shouldn't you be in the Parliament today? He said, oh, there's nothing important that's going to warrant me being there.
Just something I want to you just reminded me very quickly, how sometimes Parliament is misrepresented. There was two photographs published on Facebook. You must have seen them. An empty chamber.
Oh,
discussing the you know, the state of the economy or somebody's pension, and then a full house discussing MPs' wages, and it turns out it's a complete and utter fabrication.
Yeah, that's right. The photo, one of them was from sort of 10 years ago, wasn't it? It was like a 90s photo, you know, because of all the someone spotted the fact what people were wearing.
Yeah,
I know. Well, that's what you know. It's not a level playing field as far as representation in the media goes. We've got a big fight as we've got a win over the electorate, but we've got a fight with, you know, the right wing press that sometimes does things like that to try and show people up. bacon sandwich again. I'm going to get over that one day, but you take 200 photos of someone eating a sandwich, you're going to come up with a dozen bad ones.
Absolutely. Mike, thank you very much for coming in as usual.
Thanks, Mike.
Excellent chat. And you just talked about balance. Stephen Metcalf will be invited in for exactly the same thing. And hopefully, a little bit nearer the time, we'll get all of you in and you can have a big bun fight.
Yeah, got a UKIP candidate as well.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Fantastic. Yeah, okay. So, again, thank you very much. And if you'd like to hear if you'd like to hear this conversation again, it'll be on our website probably from tomorrow morning. Mike, I just wish you a good, honest campaign. And,
thanks, Mike.
We'll speak,
I'm looking forward
no
to it.
Doubt, before the 4 months is up. That is 9 million bicycles. You're listening to 123 with Mike in association with Affinity Wills, and it's just coming up to news time where we're going to join the main newsroom to hear about these dreadful Paris attacks, etc. Don't go away. Lots to come in the next hour, including some very special music in Ralph. Don't go away. See you in just a moment.
On the hour across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.